Blog Talk Radio.
Another episode of Wake Up African People. And this is the Truth Doctor, along with my co-host, Brother Bartley. Tonight, we will be having part three of The Coming of Alexander and the Making of Serapis, a.k.a. Jesus the Christ, in these days and time. We're having our host, being my host, and Dr. Walter Williams, will be giving you the information that you need to uplift your mind. And now I will give the mic to my host, so he can give you a few words.
Brothers and sisters, welcome to another live broadcast of Wake Up African People. To the host, Brother Akbar, and our distinguished guest, Dr. Walter Williams, I greet you all with the words of our ancient Egyptian ancestors, Mayat Hotep, which means peace. Tonight, Dr. Williams will continue with part three of his lecture on the historical origin of Christianity. Tonight's topics will begin with the Moors. But before we introduce our illustrious guests, I will now turn the mic over to our host of Wake Up African People, Brother Akbar, the Truth Doctor. He will now read from chapter 10 of the concluding comments from the historical origin of Christianity. Brother Akbar, it's now yours.
Brother, my dear brother, yes, Dr. Williams had the cutting edge book here that will uplift your mind and free your soul from man-created religion. Now, this is not what his book is reading. I'm about to read from that now, but that's just what I had to say about the great doctor. And we thank him, and we thank the ancestors that they brought him along so he can research and get this information to give out to our people. Now I would read from his book, The Concluding Comments, Chapter 10. Now get this book. If you don't, I feel sorry for you. This book is written to set you spiritually free of all religious bondage that our Malachite Coptic Egyptian ancestors unwittingly helped to set into motion. Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. Western societies uses these religions as political tools to indoctrinate the world's masses. This includes your great-grandparents, your grandparents, your parents, and now you. Any person reading this book should by now know that I confirm my heritage as an ancient Egyptian. I will spend the rest of my life sharing my research with those oppressed descendants of the original ancient Egyptians among us who will find their own way back as they resurrect the spiritual consciousness of ancient Egypt within them. Many times after giving a lecture on the historical origin of Christianity, I am asked the question, if what you say is true, and there has never been a man that walked the earth in the human form of any race, creed, or color by the name of Jesus Christ, then what do I put in its place? My answer is, you were born with a divine spiritual birthright. And that divine spiritual birthright was given to you at the time of your birth by the He Creator, who used your mother and father as human instruments to bring you forth in human form. This divine spiritual birthright is your life spirit that dwells inside of you at this very moment. At the time of your birth, your divine indwelling spirit or spirituality was connected to and spiritually in tune with the spiritual consciousness and rhythm of the universe. Through your pineal gland, brain fibers, which are connected to your nostrils, taking in the air that you breathe. The air you breathe keeps you in spiritual consciousness with your creators and the spiritual rhythm of the universe, thereby giving you a personal relationship with your creator. I have been fortunate not to allow any man-made religions to sever or confuse my personal relationship with my creator. You were born with the same birthright use it. Always remember that you were born spiritually free of all man-made religions. No one was born with a religion. What happened is that man-made religions was introduced to confuse the natural spiritual cosmic unity you have with the she-he creator. In his place, you were indoctrinated by man in one of his man-made pagan heathen occult religions, such as Christianity, Islam, Black Hebraism, Judaism, Buddhism, etc. These religions were designed for political and social control by not understanding your natural spiritual connection with your creator. You allow man to confuse and substitute your naturally given spiritual birthright with one of his man-made unnatural religions. This is similar to being introduced to cigarettes, alcohol, or drugs. You were not born with cigarettes, alcohol, or drugs, nor were you born with any of the man-made religions. Man-made religions, cigarette smoking, drinking, alcohol, and the using of drugs are all man introduced. Always remember, your creator provided you with all of your spiritual needs at the time of your birth. The introduction of religion was done to place governments, nations, all of the civilized worlds under the control of an assortment of man-organized religions. One must always remember that all religions today are used as political tools of control. Political, military, economic, including taxation and social control, have proven to be easier under man-made religions rulership. This was also the smoothest path for eventual world domination and the acquisition of absolute power, misdistribution of wealth, and a world population of obedient religious slaves. Always remember, our ancestors, the ancient Egyptians, never had or practiced religion. They practiced what is called today the Maatian Creed, a natural spiritual way of life that was in tune with the spiritual consciousness and rhythm of the universe, based on the cosmic natural law of Maat, truth, justice, peace, wisdom, and love. The icon Serapis was introduced for a political purpose. That purpose was to get our Coptic Egyptian ancestors to worship and apostatize a European icon as God. This eventually happened over many years, starting with the Diophysite Coptic Egyptian Christians, who began to worship this European spiritless icon called Serapis under the new name and title Christ. This laid the foundation for Christianity, for the Roman Byzantine Catholic Church, the Hagia Sophia, and the entire world. The information written in this book is very vital to our African community. At this time in world history, if we are to advance out of this mental and spiritual confusion, we must have the knowledge of what happened to our ancient Egyptian ancestors in the past in order for us to know what has to be done in the future. If I had not written this book, chances are you would never have known the true historical origin of Christianity, because Christian theology, as taught throughout the history today, will never reveal this to you. The reason is that the European religious and academic communities have erased the Coptic Egyptian origin of Christianity, thereby creating a total European racist worldview of Christianity. This is done by getting you to believe that God so loved the world that he sent his only begotten Son, Jesus the Christ, to save the world from sin. This is teaching you, the believer, to believe that God's only begotten Son is a European with long flowing blonde hair, blue eyes, and a heavy facial beard, giving the illusion that the European is the embodiment of God on earth in the form of the incarnate Jesus the Christ. At this point, you are encouraged to embrace this European image as your personal Savior and God. This starts you to subconsciously act docile in the presence of the European, which gives them the illusion that they should think, act, feel superior over people who of African descent and other races of colors. Since we as a people of African descent have been spiritually disconnected from our ancient Egyptian ancestors, we do not think and live our lives as subjects of our own ancestral historical experience. Therefore, we conduct our lives based on illusions set in place for us by the European society through their educational and religious systems. For instance, the three major religions such as Christianity, Islam, and Judaism teach the descendants of the ancient Egyptians to hate their ancestors, culture, and civilization by teaching through sermons and religious literature that the ancient Egyptians were evil and disobeyed the laws of God, thereby bringing about their own destruction. Our lives and experience are based on these European-created illusions. These illusions create confusion and disorder in our everyday thinking. Being spiritually and consciously aware of the greatness of our ancient Egyptian ancestors' history and culture will help to dispel these illusions and myths. Once one has to realize that the European value system that we live under teaches us European traditions and purposely leads the descendants of the ancient Egypt away from ancient Egyptian thought and culture, Europeans have long been working on changing the spiritual nature of us as a people. They began with our ancient Egyptian ancestors, starting with the entrance of Alexander the Great in Egypt in 332 BCE. The descendants of these Europeans continue to this very day to mislead the descendants of the ancient Egyptian people, whom they have trained to call themselves Nubians, Sudanese, Ethiopians, Negroes, Blacks, and now African Americans. This has been done by remapping the world, slavery, and by their organized educational and religious system. Ironically, while the Europeans were teaching and steering the descendants of the ancient Egyptians away from the knowledge and truth of their ancestors, they began to engage in a monumental effort to take control and distort the truth about the ancient Egypt and the ancient Egypts, ancient Egypt and the ancient Egyptians. One of their first tactics was to take ancient Egypt away from its African origin and identity. With cunning intent, this was accomplished through word manipulation and semantics. Attempts were made to remove Egypt from the continent of Africa and place it in a non-existent Middle East. Today, the European academic community has devised a vicious and devious scheme to make the ancient Egyptians appear to be European by portraying Ptolemaic and Roman Egypt before the eyes of the world masses. A second tactic used to gain control of ancient Egypt is their claim to have deciphered the metal letter or hieroglyphics Their claim is based on the supposed finding of the Rosetta Stone and the Stone of Canopus by Champollion. And Adolf Erman, who later published in 1880 the world's first grammatical dictionary of the hieroglyphics, and the work of others, see appendix, for the repudiation of the decipherment of the hieroglyphics on page 146 of Dr. Williams' book, The Origin, The Historical Origin of Christianity. I will now quote Carter G. Woodson, the author of The Miseducation of the Negro. Our religious and educational system have justified slavery, peonage, lynching, segregation, discrimination, and mass arrest of African American people. If you can control a man's thinking, you do not have to worry about his actions. These words are true today as they were when written in 1933. I now conclude sharing with you what I was told many years ago about the word facts. Facts, I was told, are stronger than arguments. Arguments more profound than reasoning. And, okay, I lost my place there. Sorry about that. More profound than reasoning. More dependable than opinions. Silence disputes, supersedes predictions, and facts always end the argument. Yes, I have now finished reading the excerpts from Dr. Williams' book, and I am about to bring him on in a few seconds. Dr. Williams, are you with us? Okay, hold on a minute. A little bit of technical difficulties. He'll be with us in a minute. Okay. Dr. Williams, you are with us. The mic is yours, sir.
Thank you very much, Brother Akbar. And I want to thank Brother Bartley also, your co-host, for inviting me on to your program. And you just read concluding comments from my book, The Historical Origin of Christianity, and you did such a brilliant, masterful job. Thank you very much for that concluding comments from my book. Tonight, we're going to continue on part three, with part three, from the series that we started last month, I believe. And tonight, I'm going to touch on the Moors, the Seljukian Turks, the Crusades. I'm going to talk about Ibn al-Arabi, alias Muhammad. That's the man whose biography and life was used to create today's Islam. And we're going to talk about Mohammedanism as a result of the life and times and biography of Ibn al-Arabi, alias Muhammad. We're going to talk about the Ottoman Turks taking over the Byzantine Empire, except for the double-walled city of Constantinople, where that was the last stronghold for the Byzantine emperors. We're going to talk about John the Eighth in 1439, transferring the seat of Christianity from the double-walled city of Constantinople into Europe, from the Hagia Sophia, which is located in Constantinople, today called Istanbul, Turkey. Today that church is a museum. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how Mohammed II, in 1453, blew a hole in the double walled city of Constantinople and entered Constantinople and seized the church of Hagia Sophia and the city itself. So we're going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about the Vatican and being created in 1445. But I'm going to give you short overviews, historical short overviews on these particular subjects that I just mentioned. Now let's get back to the Moors. The Moors are African people. I didn't say were African, they still are. And where did they come from? Moor is a nickname. That's the name that was given to those Africans who are also listed in history as the Berbers. They lived in North Africa along the Mediterranean. And in fact, they lived all in that region there. But they crossed from Morocco to enter Spain in 1051. After the Spanish government had invited them to come to Spain and bring civilization to pagan, heathen, uncivilized Spain. Those same Spanish governors who controlled Spain asked the Byzantine emperor for that permission to have the Moors come and bring civilization to Spain. It was granted. So the Moors took off, went to Spain, and began to spread literacy. That's how you begin to bring civilization to anyone, when you bring literacy. The first thing you got to teach the individual whom you're trying to bring civilization to is the ABCs. The ABCs, or the alphabet, will make you a literate individual. So in 1051, those African Moors left Morocco and Mauritania and entered Spain, and they began to set up schools there to begin to spread the ABCs, or literacy. They also began to build, because they are direct and were direct descendants of the ancient Egyptians. And as you know, the ancient Egyptians are your first builders of the world, because they created mathematics. So with the knowledge of mathematics, the Moors began to build cities such as Seville, Granada, Toledo, and other places in Spain that is still standing right today as I speak. Then, after being in Spain from 1051, starting in 1051, when the seat of Christianity was moved out of Northeast Africa, out of Constantinople, out of the Church of Hagia Sophia, by John the Eighth, and we're going to get to that, who went to Florence, Italy, and relinquished what is known as the Donation of Constantine to make way for that transfer to come about into Spain. And they set up what is known as the Vatican over there. So the Spanish government under Ferdinand Isabella came and adopted Christianity for their religion, for the country of Spain. And then in 1479, in 1482, they began to set up what is known as the Spanish Inquisition. The Spanish Inquisition was to get rid of the Moors out of Spain for racial and religious reasons. So in 1482, the Spanish Inquisition was set up, and a man by the name of Thomas de Guatemala was elected to be the Inquisitor General of Spain. And he began to run the Moors out of Spain. The Moors went into the countries along North Africa, such as Libya, Tunisia, Morocco, Algeria, Mauritania, Egypt. And then some of them went into Europe to help the Europeans, because during that time, that was the beginning of the European Renaissance era. So the Europeans needed a lot of help in Europe for the building trades that was to be initiated in Europe in order for Europe to have buildings and et cetera, et cetera. And they also went into Mali in Africa, and they set up what is known as the University of Timbuktu. We'll get to that also if we have time to do so. But anyway, under Ferdinand and Isabella, they hired a ship owner by the name of Christopher Columbus. Now, I know there's been debate on whether that was a Christopher Columbus, but we, at this point, we won't debate that. We're going to continue to say that they hired Christopher Columbus to take the Moors out of Spain, which he did, and he stumbled upon the Americas. And while in North America, the Moors began to build. Benjamin Banneker was a Moor. The Moors built the President's Palace, so forth and so on, built the White House. And as you know, Benjamin Banneker helped set out and lay out the city of Washington, D.C. But anyway, the Moors were now in the Americas and in North America. And in 1619, the Spanish and the Portuguese began to go into Africa and take Africans out of Africa to bring over into this hemisphere, the North American hemisphere. So in 1619, they brought their first load of African human beings from Africa over in this hemisphere, and they landed in St. Augustine, Florida, and so forth and so on. Now, mind you, I want you to know this. During the time of slavery in this country, all Africans living in this country were not slaves. They were not made slaves. Now, if you see a movie called 12 Years of Slavery, that will attest to exactly what I'm saying. So in this country, there were 380,000 free men and women of African descent. And what the Europeans, slave traders did, which is the Spanish and the Portuguese, they put the Moors and the enslaved African taken out of Africa to be made slaves over in this country called North America. They put them under one umbrella, and they gave them a name, Negro, and the name Negro and black is synonymous. Today, as a suggestion by one of our leaders, these black Negroes are also known and identified as African Americans. So, under the one umbrella, the Moors and these Africans who were brought over here for slavery were put under one umbrella, given the name Negro, because both of these two factions are Africans. So therefore, the Moor vanished, the ancient Egyptian vanished, and the Coptic Egyptian vanished. Now, the ancient Egyptians, the Coptic Egyptians, and the Moor is one and the same. So I read a book some years back called God Wills the Negro by Theodore P. Ford, 1939. He said that the ancient Egyptians vanished and the Negro appeared. So I'm adding that not only did the ancient Egyptian vanish, the Coptic Egyptian vanished, the Moors vanished, and all three names are connected with the ancient Egyptians at a certain time in history. So therefore, the ancient Egyptian vanished, the Coptic Egyptian vanished, and the Moors vanished, and the Negro appeared. So here today, we are in this country today using those names of black, Negro, and African Americans to identify us as a people. But in essence, we are descendants of the ancient Egyptians, and this is what this program is all about, trying to get us back as a people connect back with ancient Egypt. Now, that's a little overview on the Moors. Now, 20 years later, after the Moors went to Spain, you had another group of people coming into Northeast Africa by the name of the Seljukian Turks, or the Seljuks. In 1071, they erupted from Iran, or through Iran, on into Northeast Africa. Iran is part of Northeast Africa, such as like Arabia is a part of Northeast Africa. Yemen is a part. Syria is a part. Turkey is a part. So forth and so on. So now you have these Seljukian Turks coming from Afghanistan. See, Afghanistan borders Iran. They came out of the Tor Bora Mountain region of Afghanistan. They came out of the Caspian Sea area of Afghanistan. They came out of the Caucasus Mountain region that extends into Iran as a region, coming from the southern part of Russia. And then also with that group, influx of that group, you had the Pakistanians coming in with them. Now, what happened is that they began to bring a different language and dialect into this region of Northeast Africa, because the Byzantine rulers, the Greeks and the Romans, spoke Greek, or they spoke the Roman language, you see? So now you have a different influx of people coming in to this area, which we call Northeast Africa, bringing a different dialect, which we today call Arabic, or the Arabic language, you see? And they began to spread and began to take up territories that was once controlled by the Byzantine emperors and empire. So they began to usurp some of their territories from the Byzantine emperors. Now, this brought on, in 1096, the first crusade. Alexius I, Komnenos, called to Europe, to the barons of Europe, to send their armies into Northeast Africa to try to defeat and get rid of the Seljukian Turks. So that crusade was called in 1096. Walter the Pennyless from Germany had an army, and Peter the Hermit from France had an army, and they all began to set out for Northeast Africa. But by the time they got there, their army was so ragged and worn out that they couldn't do anything to help the Byzantine emperors. So, but the Byzantine emperors began to continue to call to Europe for those barons to send their armies over there. And one of the barons, by the name of Rashi, Solomon Ben Bar Isaac, called Rashi, financed Godfrey and his brother Baldwin to come over in Northeast Africa to bring their army over there and to help fight the Seljukian Turks. But that was not their intent. The intent of these barons sending their armies over there was to take land and hold that land and not give it back to the Byzantine emperors, but hold it for themselves. So in 1099, Solomon Bar Isaac, called Rashi, sent his army, led by Godfrey of Dugui and his brother Baldwin. They landed in what we know today as Jerusalem. So they took over the area that we know today as Jerusalem, and they set up headquarters there. Now, once over there in Jerusalem, the members of the army began to learn how to lay brick or become brick masons by the African Moors teaching them how to be masons and how to build things. So they taught these European members of Godfrey and Baldwin's army how to become masons or builders. And what they did with that knowledge, they built a double wall city around Jerusalem. And in 1118, the army of Godfrey and Baldwin formed a society that is known as the Knights Templars. And in 1128, at the Council of Trees, France, those rich barons had a meeting, and they elected Hugh de Payne to be the first Grand Master of the Knights Templars. That was in 1128. So I'm telling you this to tell you the origin of the Knights Templars, and that's where it started, right there in Jerusalem. They first began to organize and under the name of Knights Templars in 1128, 10 years later, at the Council of Trees, those rich barons had a council meeting, and they elected Hugh de Payne, the first Grand Master of the Knights Templars. Now, within that confound of the double-walled city of Jerusalem, these rich barons began to support the Knights Templars over in that region of the world. Because in 1187, Saladin came in and took Jerusalem back from the Knights Templars. And in order for them to stay there, they had to pay a dehemi tax, which is known as a dehemi rent, or pay these Turks rent to stay in that region of the world in a peaceful manner so they wouldn't be disrupted. So that is a little something about the Crusade. There's a little something about how the Knights Templars was created, what year it was created, and so forth and so on. Now, let's move a little further. We're going to move into an area where we're going to come and meet a man by the name of Mujahideen Ibn al-Arabi, alias Muhammad. He was born in Spain in 1165, and he died in Egypt in 1240. But Ibn al-Arabi was a Moor. He was a learned man. He came from a good family in Spain, and as he grew up to be a full-grown man, he moved out of Spain into Northeast Africa and into Egypt and North Africa. And he also went into Turkey and Syria. That was his territory. So that is the first form of Islam. It was done under the creation of one man, Mujahideen Ibn al-Arabi, alias Muhammad. And he began to pick up followers before he died. The year before he died, 1239, his followers and disciples began to teach his teachings all through Northeast Africa. And 61 years later, you come up to the Ottoman Turks, who created under Osmanli the Ottoman Empire. We're talking about 1300. So for 61 years, from 1239 until the Ottoman Empire was created under the Turks, 1300, his disciples was teaching his philosophy throughout Northeast Africa and throughout Africa, in North Africa, put it like that. And in 1300, under the Ottoman Turkish rulership, the Ottoman Turks picked up on that philosophy of Ibn al-Arabi that his disciples was teaching and spreading throughout Africa. And they began to come up with a bright idea that they could use this philosophy that coming from Ibn al-Arabi, alias Muhammad, to subdue and introduce his philosophy as a form of religion. And they came up to members of and the people living in that region that they had control of with a sword. And they said, Muhammad or die. And that's how Mohammedanism began to spread. Now, what I'm doing now is giving you a short overview on everything. If you want to go into in-depth study on this, get my book, The Historical Origins of Islam. And it goes right into how today's Islam, how the Jews out of France, out of the AIU, Alliance Israelite Universal of Paris, France, in 1870 sent a group of Jewish scholars and Christian scholars, and they had also Arabic scholars to create what is known as today's Quran, 1870, okay? And they used the life and biography of one Ibn al-Arabi, alias Muhammad, to create today's Islam. So you have two Islams. You have one, the first one was Mohammedanism. And today you have the second Islam. The second Islam today is based off of a book called the Quran, created by the Jews. Because in today's Quran, you have, interspersed in today's Quran, you have Jewish literature and you have Christian literature, okay? And you have that Quran was accepted in 1919 after World War I by the Arab world. And that's when the Quran first, today's Quran, first came into existence. So those are some of the things that you should know. I'm only giving you a short overview on this. If you want to read, like I said before, get some more information on what I'm talking about, get the book, my book, The Historical Origin of Christianity and The Historical Origin of Islam. That will give you an expanded knowledge on what I'm talking about. Now, during this time, or after this time, that the Ottoman Turks were in power as the Ottoman Empire, they had taken up all of the territory that was once controlled by the Byzantine emperors under the Byzantine Empire. They had reduced the Byzantine emperors and their empire down to one entity and confined them in the double-walled city of Constantinople. And it was intimate that the Ottoman Turks would eventually break through the wall of the walled city of Constantinople and enter that city and seize the city as well as the world's first Christian church, the Hagia Sophia. Well, that was done. Prior to Mohammed II doing that in 1453, in 1439, John VIII went into Florence, Italy, at the Curia there, C-U-R-I-A, means college, in Florence, Italy, and relinquished what is known in history as the donation of Constantine to make way for the transfer of the seat of Christianity to be removed from Northeast Africa, from the double wall city of Constantinople, from the world's first Christian church, the Hagia Sophia. And that was done in 1439. 6 years later, Eugenius IV and Nicholas V dug up over the catacombs on the outskirts of Rome, dug up all those dead bodies that was buried down in the ground, known as the catacombs, to make way for the building and the coming of the Vatican. And that was in 1445 when they first began to build St. Peter's Church, known today as St. Peter's Basilica. And 14 years later, after that was done, in 1453, here came Mohammed II with a cannon. The cannon at that time was a new war weapon that was invented over in Europe. And he had this cannon to blow a hole in the side of the double wall city of Constantinople. And that's where he entered the city of Constantinople and seized the Church of Hagia Sophia. And he made the Church of Hagia Sophia a prototype and building for a mosque. And if you get my book, The Historical Origin of Islam, on the front cover is a picture of the Hagia Sophia with those with three minarets on the outside of the Church of Hagia Sophia. And so that's where I want to stop at this time, and because now we're at the beginning of the Vatican in 1445. And on our next session, which will be next week, we're going to continue our fourth lecture series on this matter. And we're going to come up and talk about the Vatican next week. We're going to talk about God. We're going to talk about the Bible. We're going to talk about how the Old Testament was created when it was first printed. We're going to talk about the New Testament, who brought forth the New Testament. We're going to talk about a lot of things. So at this point, I'm going to stop and turn the floor back to Brother Akbar, the Truth Doctor.
Yes, yes. Thank you, Doctor, for taking us to this point. I just want to say it's a guy out there with video out. His name is Afro Style. He claims he reads hieroglyphics and all these things, and he's saying that the doctor is wrong, and he's just an ignorant old man that don't know what he's talking about and everything. So I went to his site, and maybe about 10 times I invited him and everybody that was on that site saying that Dr. Williams, one guy even went as far as saying that Dr. Williams was a troublemaker because he's giving us
funny
because he's disturbing his you know, his God fix. You know, he's Jesus or Muhammad or he, whatever he thinks he is fix that makes him think, you know, or maybe takes away some of the pain that's being perpetrated on him by this white supremacist system. I mean, you know, we don't know. This trauma is deep because they're looking for a savior. but we have to save ourselves. We have to come together and unite. That seems like one of the dirtiest words, people, is unity. You know, unity scares them because they feel as though if they unite, they're going to bring the white man hammer down on them. You know, the white man, the destructive your weapons or whatever. And they don't even know that a lot of them man these damn weapons that this country uses to go over and take over and do the things that they do against other people of the world. But we as a people have to stop getting, you know, silly when it comes to this mind control that they got on the social engineering, which is religion. Religion is the oldest tool of social engineering. There's no older tool. It was no social engineering until religion came the way we see it today. You know, the thing is people live collectively, like the professor said, we did not worship no religions. We had, you know, a connection with the universe and all the natural things that's within it. But these people here was a control freaks, and that's what they still doing to the day. Religion is control, to control you through one of the highest feelings that a person can have is to wonder where he came from. And the crazy part about it is you came out your mother. You see, you know what you came from. You had a mother, but you look something beyond your mother, where you came out of. And this is silly. You came out your mother. You didn't drop out of no space, laid no egg, or flew off no meteorite from somewhere else, hurled down here by Zeus, or anything. This stuff is a trick that has our people in a trick bag. And you better be glad that we have Dr. Williams here to free us. So stop your madness, and I'm talking to this Afro-style guy. Take down that stupid video because you're making yourself look stupid. You've been invited. It's a $5,000 reward on the table if you can prove the doctor wrong. It's been there for 20 years. Nobody has. You're not. Stop slandering the doctor. You're making yourself look stupid because this information right now is being accepted by many, many people. Even Caucasian people are buying the doctor's book. So take that video down, man. You're making yourself look dumb. Brother Bartley, do you have anything to say?
Well, I think you and the doctor said about all I can say. But in terms of us being the way we are, you have to remember we were programmed from childhood with Mother Goose rhymes and all that kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? Humpty Dumpty. So our minds have been programmed to accept illusions, stuff that are not, things that are not real, like Santa Claus and all these type of mythical characters. You know what I'm saying? So we've been indoctrinated to think the way we think. The majority of people who cling to a religion don't really know themselves. They're looking for answers outside of themselves when the answer is inside of themselves. So it's a form of indoctrination using the Bible, which to me at this point, I view it as one of the greatest propaganda tools that man has ever devised. And that's why it's such a difficult task to try to get people to be thinkers, free thinkers. And that's a hard job. The information and facts are there. And as you can see, no one want to challenge it because no one, they think that what we're talking about, the things that Dr. Williams has given to us, oh, he'll go away. You know what I'm saying? It ain't going to do nothing. But I want the public to know that this thing is taking off. All you have to do is go to Amazon and look up the historical origin, and you'll see that the books are moving, and you can see the reviews on the books are really out there. And truth be told, it's not just coming from blacks. A lot of white, young white people are picking up this book because they want some answers. They want to know why, if there's only one God, people fighting and killing each other over these belief systems. These belief systems are dangerous, especially in today's world. You got people talking about the Muslims talking about Christians, they killing each other, they maiming each other. You see what I'm saying? Hopefully that kind of nonsense don't come to America like it is in other parts of the world. But as you can see and from reading the newspapers, that it is coming this way. So all this stuff is just an enigma in the minds of men, perpetrated by men, written by men, you see. So on that subject, that's all I want to say right now. We could get some input, hopefully, from the listening audience, see if there's anyone out there who want to have some input, or they think that what is being taught and said is wrong. Well, if you think it's wrong, then present your case, present your facts. You see? So that's where it's at with this right here. You know, present your facts. If you don't have no facts, and if you want to learn, keep tuning in. That's all I have to say.
Well, we have, well, look like one call is in here twice. I'm gonna push and see if they have anything to ask, Doc.
They done got scared, man. You know what I mean?
Call it 8633. Do you have anything to say? No? Okay. Let me try it again. Call it 8633. You have a question? Okay, well, Doc, they ain't calling tonight. I invited them. You know, I'm going to invite anybody that think that they know or they can refute the Doc's work. For 20 years, his book has sat around my house until it just disappeared, you know, because I moving around, you know, you leave things and misplace things and stuff. And I tried to deny the book. But when you start putting the dates together and looking at the time and the historical progression of history, you can see that this, you know, this argument can't be refuted. In no way, no shape, no form can you defeat it. That's why Doc never has to worry about nobody wanting to debate him. They don't want no parts of this because it would destroy their myth, belief in the myth, and some of them have invested their lives in it. They make money off of it. They pimp it on the people and everything. Because if you ever have a black so-called leader or scholar, if he was not privy to the information, you could give him a pass. But if they're privy to new information that will set the minds free of our people and they don't accept it, 9 times out of 10, they pimping the people. So we want you to come over here and do your study, and don't just take Dr. Williams' word. He's giving you books that you can go access for yourself. He's giving you dates that you can go look up where things happen historically. And then when you start taking them dates and putting them to the dates that they tell you, about when the Bible and Jesus was made and Jerusalem was built, and it's an ancient stuff. You can start to put this thing together for yourself and see that it's all fabrication, and they have you in the world of make-believe. Dr. Williams, you want to close us out, sir?
Yeah, well, you and Brother Bartley have really laid my argument out. My research that I've been doing for 40 years, going on 41 years now, with next year coming in, is I spent my whole life trying to gather information to free our African people living in the African community in America and throughout the world. Those Africans who are living in America and throughout the world, I'm trying to free you if you want to listen, if you want to be free, if you want to liberate yourself, I can't liberate you. You have to do this yourself. I can only give you information. The information that I provide for you will liberate you if you accept it. Now, if you want to continue like you are, fine. I can't stop you from doing that. You are a free human being. My message is to you, Christians, Muslims, Black Hebrew Israelites, those so-called Black Jews and so forth and so on. I'm not trying to tell you not to be a Christian, not to be a Muslim, not to be a Black Hebrew Israelite, not to be a Jew. I have no reason or an authority to tell you that, because I didn't tell you to be a Christian. So I have no right to tell you not to be a Christian. So if you want to be whatever you want to be, it's okay. Feel free to do that. But I have information that I'm imparting and have imparted to my African community through my two books. And I got another book coming out very soon. My wife and I are collaborating on writing this third book, and it will be out. And everything that we write, or I write, is to help liberate our people in the African community if they accept it. I can't make you accept it. If you want to still go into these churches and bow down to the white man and tell the white man that you love him, that he's your God in the form of the image of this Jesus the Christ, then nothing I can do about that. What you're doing to yourselves by doing that, going into these various churches, you are supporting white supremacy, because the icon, the image, and the symbol of white supremacy is institutionalized in all Christian churches in America and throughout the world. So when you go to these churches, you become part of helping white supremacy stay alive. You become part of helping white superiority stay alive. And you become part of African and Black inferiority stay alive. So what you're doing, when you go into these churches, you're giving away all your spiritual power. That makes you a weakling. So in the pews of these churches, as you sit there worshiping this white image on the cross that don't look like you, I ask you a question. Do you think that the white race will take their children and their family into a church where they have a big Black African Jesus the Christ on the wall and teach their children and their family that this is their God and Savior? Do you think they would do that? I'll give you the answer. Hell no. They wouldn't do that. So why are you doing it? And you wonder why, as you go into these churches and you pray to this white man on that cross, you call him God, you tell him that you love him, that he's your Savior, and you can't live without him, and he's made so much to you and everything. As soon as you come out of the church praying to this white image on the cross, you got to come outside of that church and beg that white man that looks like that white image on that cross for justice and jobs and other things to keep you alive. That's funny, isn't it? So,
yes, sir. That
so
is.
You have to realize what you're doing to yourself. Then the next question I ask Christians, who and what is the name of your African God that looks like you? Do you have an African God? Then what's the name of it? Tell me about it. Talk to me. Okay? So now, if what I'm writing in my books and what I'm saying on the radio or on television or on YouTube, if this offends anyone, then I say to that individual, I'm not going to apologize for me offending you. Okay? I'm not going to apologize for that. I would say, good. I'm glad I offended you. I'm glad my words are powerful enough to rattle you. I hopefully my words will make you think about what you're doing to yourself, to your family, to your children, to your community. You see? So I'm glad to be able to do just that. So this person who wants to ridicule me, fine, I have no problems with that. But he is a coward. He will not come on the radio. Now, you invited him to come on this program. Is that right, Brother Akbar?
Yes, sir.
Then he's not here. So where is he?
No.
I'm not running
he's
from you. So you don't run from me. So if you got all this different attitudes that you have created towards me, then bring it on the radio and confront me. I'm here. I'm not going to run no place. So, you know, if you don't do that, then you're a coward. Okay, okay. You're jiving. You're not for real. Okay.
Yeah.
You have no scholarship to back up what you believe. Okay. So come and confront me, and we'll take it from there.
Yes. And to for the last words of the show, from the Truth Doctor, I think that black people need a modern day mental, physical, and literary iconoclasm. And that means breaking of the images and destruction of European religious literature. Good night. This has been another episode of Wake Up African People.
Mayat Hotep.
Mayat Hotep.
All right. All right.